This conference will now be recorded.
Hey everybody, how's it going this morning? Hope you're doing well. You're watching and listening to Me and My Racket. It's the show about tennis industry professionals sharing their passion, purpose, and connecting over the sport we all know and love. And today on the show, we have Mike Hurley. Mike, hello.
Hello, Miss Claire of the famous Bartlett family.
Oh no. Hey, I'm gonna do a quick bio of you real quick for our listeners. So everybody, Mike
Bye.
Hurley is currently the volunteer tennis coach at Mount Juliet High School in Nashville, Tennessee. He's also a private coach and a consultant for CAT. He has a wealth of experience in the tennis industry and a passion for community service and outreach. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Miss Claire. It's a delight.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. How have you been doing? What's been going on?
As we kind of spoke earlier, we're healthy. I'm doing well. I mean, I've been because being affiliated with the USPTA and the USTA, I want to be kind of an example. So, setting aside all the political agenda, I'm just trying to abide by what the protocols are and lead by that. And I was talking to my wife when we started doing this in the end of May or end of March rather, and we figured out we're looking at all these things and all the people that might be affected. And I go, holy crud. She and I are at that age. Well, she won't say that, but I'm at that age. I'm one of those vulnerable people now. I'm going, I never thought I'd be at this point where I was, looking like it. But then, of course, I was so glad that you didn't introduce me as Wilford Brimley from Cocoon, the movie. So this is, so we're doing okay. I mean, I've started to teach a little bit this week, and we're doing good. We're doing good. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. Well, good. Well, it's good to hear you getting outside and teaching a little bit, because I think it
Absolutely.
has been difficult for everybody, and it's been important to shelter at home and social distance, but I know it's good for everybody to get outside too, so that's good to hear.
Spot on.
Good deal. Well, hey, I want to dive into your tennis story a little bit, and I'm just interested, and viewers and listeners are interested. How did you get started, and when did you first start getting involved in tennis, and kind of walk us through that?
Well, I was lucky, being ADD and hyperactive as a child and being the oldest of five. My mother and father would just kind of throw us out in the backyard. And so we play a lot of baseball and basketball. And tennis was huge back in the 60s and the 70s. And it still is reasonably huge, but it's more of in a private sector, especially here. But I looked at guys playing tennis. I'm going, man, they are different. And I like to be rough and tumble a little bit. And I had a classmate, a very close classmate, who dared me to play. And I went up on a guest day. There was a little club about a half a mile up the street from me. It happened to be on Hartree of all things. And we played. Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I mean, I'm playing on dirt with a yellow or a white tennis ball, And it was crazy. And I was addicted immediately. And then I got my brother out, and we used to play tennis against the garage door, and break the windows all the time. And my dad would go, and he worked all the time, but he would go and replace the windows. And it finally became necessary for him to join the club so we could play tennis up there because it was cheaper than the windows he's replacing. So lucky that I got to play at a tennis club growing up, and I primarily played at a place called Maple Lake Park where everybody in the city played. And so we had a huge tennis program. When I was 14, we had what we called a Mansfield, Ohio Junior Davis Cup program. I still remember this. I was so happy. I was number 100 on the boys list at 14. And when I was 18, I got up to 40. And I thought, that was pretty good. And but we traveled. The guy that ran, a guy named Jerry Lorenz, got our parents, and we got into our big old station wagons, and we traveled and barnstormed to other clubs during the summer. We didn't have indoor, but we played tons of tennis, even though, and most of us had jobs too. But and then it just got more addictive. I was able to grow up with some folks that really played tennis, and they started playing USTA up in Cleveland. And we did well enough in doubles that we qualified for Westerns one year, and I got in as a wild card for singles, and I just kept going from there.
That's
Lucky
awesome.
that I networked, not by plan, but I networked with a lot of good tennis people, and they got me jobs. My college coach, who wasn't really my college coach until later, saw me teaching some young kids because I just sort of was across from my dorm.
Right.
And he said I had an interest in teaching and so forth. So he kept me involved and he got me a job out east.
Yeah.
And that led to being an assistant director at a very prominent tennis camp. Actually, it's an athletic camp.
Right.
And from there, you know, get out of college. What are you going to do? Teach biology to kids that are smarter than you? Teach chemistry? It just didn't work. And I was lucky to build an indoor facility in my little hometown, and that's where I went. And I went from there from being a guy that did everything, to teaching, to directing, to programming, and then became a director of tennis.
Yeah.
And then I took a pause, had a family. I was spending way too many hours at the club. And got a chance because of all the workshops I was doing in the Midwest and so forth, like Jim Ball and Wally Craig and Russ Schaefer with Wilson kind of came after me, and I went to work for Wilson for many years.
Yeah.
But still taught, still coached on the side. So in a nutshell, I've been lucky. I've been very, very lucky.
I'm
thankful.
And it sounds just like that, like you said, being on the court teaching has always been a constant, even though you've been at all many different points in the industry, you know, at very different angles. You've always really enjoyed teaching.
The point was trying to get my selfishness for getting on boards and directing and, you know, Northeastern Ohio Tennis Association. I was a verifier for the USTA Michelob Light League and then the Volvo League and USTA League. But all those things were directed at trying to create the same community tennis that I came from.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want it to get expensive. I mean, we had a nice community, but we had a socioeconomic base that was far different from a Chicago or New York or even a Cleveland, Ohio, which was closer.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make it affordable. I wanted municipal parks to proliferate. So my passion was to make sure that we could reach everybody. And I did a lot, you know, I did a ton of stuff for schools too. I mean, and I keep saying, I don't mean that. People gave me the opportunity to be kind of a Pied Piper, and that was very important and still is. Not everybody's going to be Roger, and not everybody is going to be, Serena Williams, but there's going to be a lot of Mike Hurleys not being disrespectful because you are an absolutely fine, fine player, but Claire Bartlett's.
There's a place for everybody for sure.
Absolutely. And that's where I was, because I was kind of just above the middle of the road, but I had a passion, and my sometimes caustic sense of humor, I think drew people to the sport a little bit. If anything, to kick my butt, to shut me up. But more because it was kind of just made it kind of fun. So.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go on and on and on, and I'm not going to do that to you.
Well, so let's bring it up a little bit to, you know, what you're doing currently. And I know it hasn't been a typical time these last several weeks and months.
Wow.
But, you know, with your roles at Mount Juliet and as a consultant, and you serve on several committees and very involved, like, what does a typical week or month look like for you and all you do?
Well, there's actually, as you already said, there's two sides to the paper. The current side has been because of the people I've grown up with and worked with in the industry. They have brought me in. Boy, I can't begin to tell you how many Zooms I've been on in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Where I'm kind of like a third eye, because a lot of these folks are stressed out to the max, whether it be a director or an owner, and trying to get the right information.
Right.
And trying to prepare for phase one or phase two or phase three. You know, what is a PPL? What is a EIDL?
Yeah.
Might help us out. You know, and I don't have a dog in the hunt, so I can sit back, assess their problems.
Yeah.
You know, look at their income level, look at their cash flow structure, look at their programming. And then I'll go while they're trying to figure out how to maintain their clubs or just keep them, you know, operational, i.e. maintenance and so forth. I'll go and ask the hard questions and get you the answers.
Yeah.
Just to assist them. So been doing a lot of that. I'm also very, you know, we're also, as a family, involved with Special Olympics. Mm-hmm. And Sean Stake, who is one of the directors of Tennessee Special Olympics, put on a virtual Special Olympics this past week because we couldn't have the games this past weekend. So uh-huh. we've been doing some videos. We did a live competition, more instruction last week for all the athletes, which is a hoot. Ever get a chance to do Special Olympics, do it. It's the best time you'll ever have. The best friends you'll ever make are in Special Olympics. So we got that, the consulting. And then, of course, the primary purpose of the Hurley family right now is to be Hurley daycare. And we have we had our two grandsons here. One is finishing first grade with the help of my wife, who's a teacher for 38 years. And so he thought he was escaping, but he has a school from 8 to 11. And then I have a 2.5-year-old grandson that I look at the clock consistently looking for nap time. So we've been doing that. And then on a typical time, we would be finishing up the high school season. I've been very fortunate since my boys played there. Gosh, Matt was there in 99 through 2002 or whatever, then Kevin came in. Mm-hmm. The faculty, the athletic director, starting with Miss McDearman, and then Derek Elwell, and right now this awesome gal, Mackenzie Underwood, who actually worked under Greg Chambers.
Have allowed
me to be involved with the tennis over there. And that is so cathartic. These kids we've had come through have been unbelievable. I can say that 99.9% of every kid we've had that I've had a chance to interact with over Mount Juliet have just absolutely lifted me. It's been an absolute pleasure and privilege to coach over there. And we've had some success, but these kids are also multi-talented. You know, this year we had a kid that I call him the absent-minded professor. He's so darn smart. He had a 36 on the ACT. If you told me 3 years ago he was going to be able to pick up a racket and chew gum, I'd say you're crazy. And he would have played 3 or 4 for us this year. So I would have been coaching there in the afternoon. I would have been teaching some women in the morning. I would have been doing some consulting. I have a little thing where I go around to HOAs and look at their, what do you want to call it, their common ground, their facility, you know, tennis court, basketball court, swimming pool, and work with them on creating programming that will not affect the due structure of that HOA. And that's been a challenge, but you know, I'm kind of like a minor league Doug Cash. Doug Cash is amazing at going in and resurrecting clubs and facilities with programming and cash flows and working HR and so forth. So I stay busy. And then of course I have Tennis Nashville. I'm trying to work with them a little bit. USTA Tennessee a little bit, and I'm only really right now I'm only on one committee with Southern. That's adaptive tennis, and you know that's because of Jim Hamm. He's a great guy, keeps me going. So yeah, I'm you know, I stay busy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm really busy. Well, and you said like with coaching, you said the kids really lift you up and definitely understand that. Like what else do you find rewarding about what you do, and maybe what are some challenges as well?
Well, I woke up the other day, looked in the mirror, and I'm at an age where I think everyone looks at a guy that's gray haired. I accentuate it with this mustache, and they give you a certain trust immediately. So I get to mentor, I get to listen, and I was never really a good listener until I joined Wilson, but I've gotten better. I still got a long ways to go, but getting a chance to help kids try to navigate and make them understand that if you choose a road and it doesn't have some bumps in it, then you've chosen the wrong road.
Right.
And maybe hold their hand a little bit has been great. It's also been wonderful that some very prominent people in the industry have called me up and asked me for my advice or to help them out. I mean, so I guess I'm reaping the rewards of not thinking about what's ahead or whatever, but just being involved in tennis. And it's just been a great ride, but I'm the old man and people trust me, and I'm going to do everything I can to earn that trust.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, so as a coach, and you know, like I said, you've been at many different places in the industry. But what is your coaching philosophy, or what do you try to instill in whoever you know you're working with or teaching?
Well, there's a couple of things I tell the kids, and I try to tell myself. You know, failure is never quite as frightening as regret. You know, you know well as well. You're told against a certain player, you have to come in. You have got to get in there. You have got to change what you're used to. Get out of your comfort zone, and then being able to tell that person when they come off, and perhaps they got because that person's good, but they stayed to the plan and executed, and how proud you are of them. Even though they lost, but you know, I don't want them to regret the journey. You know, and the other one is, as far as I'm concerned, is, and this was shared with me by my mentor and hero, really, Don Castle, was, you know, you know how many chances you give a child?
How many?
Well, you give them just one more.
Just one more. Yeah.
No, you're always giving them one more.
Right.
And as mad as you get, it's my mad. When I get mad, it's because I don't know how to get through to them, or I didn't present it right. And I tell the kids that. I'm going to be upfront with them. You know, if I get loud and I'm upset, it's I'm yelling at myself.
Yeah.
Because you came here to learn from me. You wanted to be motivated by me, and I am not able to do it today. But I'm going to darn well take the time to figure it out. So, you know, I'm not going to regret this. We're going to figure this out together. And we're going to do this one more time together. So those are really the two things I kind of stick around to.
Yeah. Well, and as a coach too, like being up front with your players, I think that helps, like you're saying, it just helps the player trust you a little bit more, because it's saying, hey, I'm trying to do my best here too. And not every, even the coach has a bad day sometimes, you know, but we're going to work towards a solution.
Right. I do not want to be known as a bad coach.
Yeah.
There are some, they're filtering out, because you cannot be a coach 8 to 5. So, you know, I know the good coaches, you know, the good coaches, and I want to be around those folks. And when I'm around those folks, I get more confidence, because I know that they've fallen down, the old Chinese proverb, they've fallen down 7 times, but they've gotten up 8. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do every day with these kids.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Great. Well, so switching gears a little bit, but you referenced this earlier, you know, with your involvement with the Special Olympics, and then you've also done a lot of work for SPUD. And so talk a little bit about how you first got started in that, and just everything involved with those programs.
Well, it's real easy. You start dating a woman that's in special education. That's the first part.
Yep.
Okay. And you want to impress her, so you get involved. And for me, it was getting out of my comfort zone. And I have to say it, I was uncomfortable. But guess what?
Yeah.
They're people. And, you know, I've had some of the athletes come up to me and says, how do you get through the day with that big thing on your lip, Coach Mike? And, you know, it's just like, they're just so real and so much fun that I got involved with it. And with another folk, Kirk Anderson, who's of USTA fame, he started the Ohio Special Olympics tennis venue, and he called me up and said, hey, do you have any time? And I go, yeah, let's see. Okay. Because Kirk was involved, my wife was involved in special needs, and so I just got involved. And that was back in, like, initially 81, 82, and then I became the director of that. Then I came down here, and Wanda, Tim, and with Bill a little bit, we were doing at Vanderbilt. I was just looking for, you know, where is Special Olympics?
Right.
Got hooked up with them, and when I moved down here in 91, and then Trish Smith came in, and Trish and I have run the Tennessee Special Olympics since 91.
Yeah.
Spud was created by a guy named Jim Hamm out of Atlanta. Just a tremendous, charismatic guy. And there was a need, because for some reason, Special Olympics got away from able-bodied partners. At the games. And this was, SPUD stands for Special Populations Unified Doubles. So you have a unified partner with a special adaptive player, and we play doubles. And we try to do it according to ability. We'd use orange ball, we've used red ball, we use the green dot ball. Mm-hmm. But it gives them a chance to interact, play tennis, play competitively, make it count. And those that aren't quite ready for that, we still have a skills competition. Uh-huh. And we make it heady. We say, hey, you got to do this in 30 seconds, or you got to get to the net in this way. And they love it. They love it because, you know, we're interacting with them. And it's so genuine to see these folks when they do it. You know, they may only hit six or seven downs, okay? And and they look at you afterwards and they beam. They absolutely beam that they did it. And going, holy crap, they've got life so much better off than we do.
Yeah.
So we've been doing that. It has been interesting because they also have issues at home, health-wise, you know, transportation-wise, and so forth. So it's not something we can do. We're working towards trying to do a little bit more consistently. I think the Buddy Up program, which I am not involved with, but I'm very impressed with, is something that we will look at and try to get it. Because of Tennis Nashville, we're creating a group of volunteers so we can run maybe, the dream was this year to run it like a week-long camp prior to our spud.
Yeah.
And like last year, we got groups up from Memphis and from Atlanta, from Murfreesboro, from Cookeville, of course, Nashville. We had a great event. We had, I was like going to a qualifier for the juniors. I mean, we had over 150 people watching the event. So it was awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll continue to do that. A guy you have to give kudos to besides Trish. Trish doesn't work without Trish. Mm-hmm. But Daniel does a lot of the background work for us for Spud. And then Tom Druffel. Tom is the one that knew enough people in Nashville that we were able to get things going. And my hat's off to him to helping us go. So.
Yeah, great. Good to hear. Well, so what's some advice, you know, maybe suggestions that you have for people looking to get into the tennis industry, whether they're transitioning their careers or they're new professionals? Do you have anything to say to them or anything to offer?
Well, I think your middle name has to be passion. And from a structural standpoint, get rid of your wristwatch, get rid of the clock on the wall, because if you're going to measure the time you're going to be out there, you're not going to get involved. You're not going to grow with the sport. You've got to do, I think MJ's the one that said it, or maybe it was Ned, not, I don't know. Anyways, you know, I clean courts at 12 o'clock at night at the Muncie Indoor so I could have a chance to work with a guy named Robert Duvall, not this actor, but he was the tennis coach. I mean, I clean bathrooms. I work the desk. I strung rackets. What else did I do? I opened cans of tennis balls at a registration desk, helping the registration person. Mm-hmm. I hit against a wall for hours and hours and hours. I sat in the bleachers waiting for one of the men not to show up for a doubles thing and interjected myself in there. I went to as many workshops as I could. You know, I got to be good friends with folks that have passed away that were just tremendous mentors to me, like Chet and Bill Murphy, who were famous tennis players. But they were the ones that wrote a book on tennis drills. You know, I went to a clinic early on in Jim Valvano's basketball coaching career. Holy mackerel. I said, I gotta be in sports. These guys are awesome. Because I would walk out of there with my hair up and so forth. I wanted to take on the world. But find somebody that's done it and sit down with them. I think everybody in tennis is approachable. It's fitting into their schedule can be tough. Networking with a variety of people. I was at a club where I was encouraged to have lunch with the CEO of the Timken Corporation, the Hoover Corporation, and I got ideas on management and dealing with people, organizational skills. You just got to work the bushes and get out there and do it. You know, being a good player is I think very important because you have you can say, well, I've been through that.
Right,
but if you don't learn how to teach, if you don't learn how to motivate. If you can't pick up trash, if you can't send a handwritten note, if you can't answer a phone call in 24 hours, then maybe you should find something else to do.
Something else,
So that's what I would recommend and suggest.
Yeah, no, that's a good advice there. Well, and you mentioned a little earlier with Don Castle, but who have been your mentors or your heroes throughout, your career and your life?
Well, when I saw that question, I went, holy crud, we're gonna have to do two episodes. I've been
It's
very,
not a fair
yeah, well, we're not gonna do that, obviously.
question
But there have been so many people that gave me a hand. Excuse me. That I look up to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're
God built him, guy that a parent of one of the kids, he gave me his kid to work with, Fritz Herring back in Mansfield. Of course, Bill Richards at Ball State. A guy named Dr. David Hoops, who really pushed me to be an intellect. I'm not normally confused with an intellect, but I really had a passion and I was very interested in motor learning. And he got me involved with another guy, Dr. Bud Goetschel, who was doing things in fast and slow muscle twitch fibers and working on some research. He dropped the name Frank Shorter, who was the long distance runner or
That's right.
800 meter runner. And he was at Ball State, and that's where I went to school. And I got involved in some of the lab stuff with that. And that gave me some kinesiology that I employ even today working with the kids. So there's Grapple, there's Etcheberry. I'm name dropping, but these folks were I was close to. And then there's other guys like tennis pros like Don Martin and John Weil, who started Mr. Pee Wee Tennis. Bob Kotz, who is this business guy. So to single out one, it'd be Don Castle, and then my family.
Your family.
So yeah, a
Well,
little
yeah.
emotional about it.
Oh yeah, no. Well, and like you're saying, like family too is just it's huge, because with all the changes and turns, like being there for each other, it says a lot. It's
Yeah,
big.
it is. It's a great sport. It's been a great journey. That's why I tell the kids, I said, hey, thanks. At the beginning of the year, I just tell them, hey, we're on a journey. And what's going to be kind of cool is in May, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about this journey and kind of reminisce. And if I could just say, that's what we're going to do with our kids, even though we didn't play this spring. We're going to reminisce, I think, in the next couple of weeks. It'll be a drive-by or whatever because we got social distance. But these kids are going to have a virtual season. We're not going to let them just hang.
Yeah, no, keep them engaged and thinking
Absolutely.
for
Because
sure.
there's next year. Yeah, we got to be ready for next year,
Well, and it's a big opportunity thing, like, okay, maybe physically we can't get out and hit for hours and hours every day, or maybe we can hit some, but then, you can train mentally, you can work on your mental game. So
Look, hey, if you have a mirror, just put a mask over your eyes, but go through it, whatever. You pantomime. I'm a big believer in pantomime, especially with the rain and the crappy weather we have in January and February. So we do a lot of pantomime. And the kids just go, oh my God, this guy's nuts. But you know what? It works.
It does. But well, shift gears a little bit. What do you like to do when you're off court? I know you're tennis a lot, but if there's any time that you do have,
Well,
but
I have started to reconnect. I went to school at a Catholic school in Mansfield for 12 years. And we have a unique connection, even to this day, amongst the, believe it or not, there was only like 135 of us. But I wish I could explain to you the connection we have amongst each other. We were different, but we were all connected. And reconnecting with them in a couple of reunions has been absolutely awesome. And doing some social things with these folks. The other thing is, if I can ever get my hips under control, every time I see Greg Chambers, I just go, you lucky dog, you.
Yeah, because you've had a
Yeah,
couple
when I
more.
get my hips back under control, I'm gonna probably start hitting the golf ball like MJ does. The other thing is, I really enjoy the grandkids. I mean, I am an absolute goof with them. I'm a puppeteer. I'm a tickler. I'm a goof. Really, really enjoy that part. And although Dr. Seuss has got my tongue all over the place, I have to start reading regular things. But if I read Walk It in My Pocket one more time, I'm probably going to have some therapy. But that is what I do. I mean, that is what I do. And I'm at a point in my life where, I guess I'm enjoying things a little bit better. I see things a little clearer. I don't have to answer the bell, but I still answer the bell. So
yeah,
yeah, that's what I do. That's what I do.
Awesome. Well, do you have a bucket list? And if so, do you have anything you want to do? What are you, anything you looking forward to doing?
Well, getting out of this neighborhood, get my right hip done. I want to get back out playing. I finally have swallowed the bitter pill that I'm not the same player I was when I was 35, but I enjoy playing.
Yeah.
Especially with my buddies. And then traveling. I'm a beach guy, so I'd like to get back to doing that. That's about it. I don't really have, something will pop up. Don't get me wrong. It'll go into the bucket.
I'm
kind of open-minded. How's that?
Yeah. Well, and I think the one thing that all this has taught us just about staying in the present, and appreciating what's right in front of us.
Very good.
I mean, it's not like any of us have to go on any grand, or you can go on grand trips, but you don't have to. And as long as you're, with the people you love and in the present, I think that's all that matters, to be honest.
Well, and then you can always take your mind away by watching Netflix.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, lastly, tell us what's going on in your world. If you're working on any projects or want to promote anything, just let us know what's going on.
I would say that, I don't have any real agendas. My only agenda would be advocacy. Mm-hmm. And that is for folks out there to, once a year, raise your hand and get involved with special populations, adaptive tennis, whatever it is. There are all kinds of things in Nashville you can get involved with. Acing autism, buddy up. The other thing is, get involved with your schools, especially in the middle school area. I think that's the critical spot for tennis. These kids are they're really looking for something in that fourth through seventh grade. Once they get in eighth grade and ninth grade, they get a little more opinionated and have set their ways as far as their path is activity-wise. But please get involved with your schools. And my wife was not a tennis player, but she probably knows more about tennis from taking the boys to all the tournaments, the Southerns and all that stuff. She learned from listening to me and watching the boys. She picked up things quick. My mother certainly was not a tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
But quick story about my mother. My brother and I played on a very good high school team. We had two brothers sets, the Hurleys and the Dowitz, and then we had another guy named Ron Schaub, who's now an icon in coaching in Ohio. And we really played well and had some great events, especially my junior and senior year. But we knew things were bad when my mother, who would always come to the matches, and in Ohio, always playing a snowstorm.
Right.
We'd see this cloud of smoke as we changed ends, and my brother Pete would say, uh-oh. And he'd go, Mike, are you down? I go, yeah. Well, look over there. And my mom would start chain smoking, which is not, flattering, but in a time.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah.
of so I knew in order to kind of get her to stop smoking, I had to start playing better, So I always kind of picked her car. And I knew when I didn't see the smoke that I seemed to relax a little bit better because I knew mom wasn't worrying about me.
Uh-huh.
But so my getting back to your question, I just want this sport to grow, and I want it to grow in the communities. Private clubs are always going to have tennis.
Yeah.
You're going to have the best pros but tennis is such a people sport, and mm-hmm. it can be such a, and it's becoming more of a social sport.
Oh, yeah.
And you can stay healthy. That's the only thing. I'm going to be an advocate for tennis.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, thanks. And thanks so much for coming on the show. I've so enjoyed talking to you and learning from you, and it's been awesome.
Well, Claire, listen, don't you dare hang up on me yet.
I'm not hanging up yet.
you have the job I would have loved to have had back in the day. Joe Fleenor, before you set the standard. And you have done a marvelous job of connecting with the people out in the field. And I just want people to understand that if you have a question, if you don't know something about tennis and want to figure out how to get it going, you need to call this young lady. Claire Bartlett is your source, and she does a tremendous job.
Well,
thank you for having me, Claire. This has been awesome.
Thanks, Mike. Well, it's been fun. And thank you to our viewers and listeners. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Me and My Racket, and we are on Spotify too. So if you can't watch, but you can still listen, you can check us out there and find us on socials. And we will see you next time with our next guest, and hope you have a great day. Bye.
See ya.